I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Kevin Newman and his son Alex Newman have written a moving, absorbing, and necessary book. It's called All Out, A Father and Son Confront the Hard Truths That Made Them Better Men. The book is candid and honest, often brutally so. Written in alternate chapters by each man, the book follows Kevin Newman's ups and downs in the broadcasting business, starting here in Canada at Global, then at the CBC, then to ABC and Good Morning America and Nightline, then back to Canada and Global National, then over to CTV, where he is currently an anchor and correspondent. As he tells his side of the story, we get Alex's, about having to grow up with a prominent father and his own development into a man, and all that it means today. We find out from Kevin that he, too, was having to deal with his persona, public and otherwise. Alex comes out to his family as gay, and that sets both men on a path struggling to find oneself and one another. Kevin Newman joins me now. He was last on the program 10 years ago when he was living out here in Vancouver and anchoring Global National. I'll get Mr. Newman to tell us about the time in this part of the world and how that affected him and Alex. It's such a compelling book, one that's difficult to put down and instructive. NewmanAllOut.com is the website for more. The book is published by Random House. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program here in Vancouver today, Kevin Newman. Mr. Newman, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
So it's been 10 years since you were last on. I don't know if you remember this. You were hosting Global National out here. And,
yeah.
And it has been about 10 years since Alex came out. Now, thinking about how you've grown personally and professionally, I mean, you've come a long way, haven't you?
Professionally, I've moved on, obviously, from Global, and I'm doing, you know, different kinds of things now at CTV's W5 and with their national news. But personally, I think that's been the biggest growth of my life. I mean, when we last talked, I was, you know, I had teenage kids at home, you know, doing a daily newscast, and hadn't yet hit my 50s. And it turns out that, you know, my 50s have been the time of my greatest growth in my life almost. You know, not only the fact that the kids have left home and I could focus on that, but in rebuilding some of the relationships with my family that had, you know, been strained over the years, and that, particularly my sons.
Yeah, so not only did you and your son have to connect over this last decade or so, you also found that you needed to, say, resolve or come to terms with the relationship with your own dad.
Yeah, very much so, and the book was a conduit for that. It's been such an interesting process of forcing myself to be honest so publicly, and then having the energy from that honesty radiate out and in some cases provide challenges, like with my own dad, and the opportunity to rebuild. So in the case of my dad, I mean, I wrote about him in the book. I gave him advance notice of that. And then I said, I want to talk to you about it afterwards, because I know he's of the generation that, you know, your dirty laundry isn't on the outside. But he took offense to a couple of things and was quite hurt. And so we worked through that over a few weeks and have reset our own relationship in a much more healthy place, sort of based on mutual respect and an understanding that, you know, sometimes in families, family members hurt each other.
So this isn't a story where when Alex came out, you were going to throw him out or that you wanted to cut him out of your life. It's not like, you know, I would say a typical story of this kind, but
yeah, unfortunately, that's true. There
yeah.
are, like a lot of families do like kick their gay kids out.
Yeah. So, there were still issues that you had to resolve. And so, for people listeners who haven't read the book, what were some of those? I mean, I wouldn't say little things because they obviously mattered to you guys, but there were things that you had to resolve. Whether it was your own, I don't want to say you were homophobic, but were you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, and part of it, you know, as usual in these things, it came from a place of ignorance. I mean, I completely accepted my son's coming out. I embraced him. I loved him. I supported him. I knew it was the right thing for him. But, you know, he would invite me to gay parties, God bless him, and I'd be uncomfortable. And I would always sort of look around the room and say, oh, wow, it's a room full of gay people, instead of, these are Alex's friends. He's a doctor. He's a lawyer. He's a cop. And so I had to work through that over time. And you know, as usual in these situations, the more time you spend with the other, the more comfortable you get. So, you know, not proud of that. But I don't think also I'm alone in that. And I'm hoping that by writing about it and by being honest about, you know, my own homophobia, that it makes it easier for other dads, maybe other guys out there, to say, okay, I'm not fully there either. I'm moving in that direction, but it's a bigger leap than I thought it was. And I think, you know, if you look at my story, I mean, I think, and maybe this is the story of the society too. I think I was always tolerant, I was always accepting, but I wasn't always embracing. And what I've learned over the last 10 years, thanks to my son, frankly, for testing me on this, is that embracing is the final step. That it's not enough to just say, yeah, sure, I accept gay rights, but to say, you know, I embrace gay rights. I embrace you. I embrace your friends. I embrace your right to marriage and everything.
Did Alex worry that you would love him less because he was gay?
Yeah, and that was a great shock to me. And I didn't realize that he worried about that until the book, frankly, because he wrote his chapters by himself. I wrote mine. We exchanged the chapters. And somehow I had allowed my son to believe that my love for him was conditional on him being straight. And nothing could be further from the truth, but somehow that's the message he got from me.
By the way, the essays in the book, you write them, and then he writes one, you write one. He's a wonderful writer.
Yeah, I know. And he was dyslexic. Like,
really?
He had a lot of trouble writing, and you know, it's amazing. He's a very visual guy. He's in advertising.
Yeah.
And but I didn't realize his... And we write in different ways. He's a very emotional writer. He remembers scenes much more clearly than I do, because... you know, I still have the journalist in me and the observer, and it was hard to knock that out of me when I was writing. But yeah, he's quite a descriptive writer.
Yeah, but memory is something that I found fascinating in the book, because you will both write about similar things or similar situations, but your take on it is different than his, as is his with yours.
Yeah, and I think that's true in any family, actually. If you sit down and you have a family dinner and you remember a thing, you said, oh, that, you remember that? I didn't remember that. Is that really the way it happened? And that's kind of what it's been like. It's been like, you know, there was a moment when we lived in the United States where I knew he was sort of struggling to fit in, and so I got a basketball net, because playing a game of 21 is one of the few things that I could play okay at when I was growing up. And so I got him a basketball net, and I write about it in that sense, and then he writes about the basketball net, and the fact that I put it in cement to him was this allegorical moment for, you shall be a jock. I insist you be this kind of man. And I'm putting it in cement to make sure that you know where I stand. And, you know, I mean, some of this was, you know, some of this is his perspective, and it's his perspective as a young man. And as a father and an adult, you have to be, you know, ready to accept the judgment of your child, even if you think it's not necessarily fair. It is their judgment, and it is their truth. And I think that's one of the powerful things about the book, is that you read my chapters, and then you read Alex's chapter, and it's really only the reader that begins to see the connections of disconnect, because we're out there just spilling our beans, and the experience for the reader is the person in the middle that's going, oh, isn't that interesting?
So as a dad, because now you have some insight into what he was going through all of this, how do you deal with, say, regrets? Because, I mean, you're probably thinking now there are a million ways to do things better, maybe, as he was growing up. Was that a difficult process for you to deal with?
Well, fortunately, my son forgives me.
Yeah.
You know, for you know, the pains that I caused him, and I forgive him for some of the judgments that weren't necessarily real. So I think forgiveness makes regret unnecessary. You know, I'm hoping that. That by being so honest and sharing our mistakes along the way, that others can feel less regret about the stuff that they did. And it's not only really in LGBT families. It's that whole dynamic of raising kids. I mean, I'm of a generation of dads that I think at the outset really wanted to be much more involved in their children's lives, and thought, you know, my dad was maybe emotionally distant. I'm going to be connected. I'm not going to be that kind of dad. Well, our kids are now adults having children of their own, and we can look back a little bit about our great intentions and take stock. And that's kind of what I've done in the book, is I've looked back and I said, yeah, geez, I did want to do the right thing, but I didn't know I was going to be fired from three jobs. I didn't know we were going to move nine times. I didn't know I was going to be the sole breadwinner. You know, I didn't know I was going to have a son who sometimes was self-isolating. So it's an interesting point in life when you can sort of look back and say, so how did I do?
Yeah, and so there's a lot in this book that one can get out of it, whether you're a dad or you have a friend who is gay or something like that. I guess there was a point in writing this book other than, say, your own personal growth that both of you guys went through. But, I mean, for the reader, for people out there listening to us, there is something you want for them to get out of this book.
Yeah.
I mean, to use that phrase, Kevin, I mean, it gets better. It does. But,
you know. No, that's a great phrase, and I'm glad you mentioned it. It does get better, but with time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, for, you know, Alex has been asked this question, too. You know, what advice would you give dads? And for me, what advice would I give kids? And what Alex says often is, you know, just keep communications open and don't assume that you know everything that's going on in your kid's life. And what I always say to kids, you know, young people, is understand that if you've come out, that's the end of a very difficult process for you. But it's not the end for your parents. It's the beginning for them. And so you have to understand that managing your relationships going forward, you know, your obligation isn't just to yourself and your truth. Your obligation is to help your parents come around to where you already are. And that takes time. I assumed, you know, when Alex came out, he'd be great. He'd be happy. You know, cat's out of the bag. The very opposite happened. It would set us on a course of 10 years of testing and communications issues. And ultimately, as you say, it got better at the end. And he accepted that I truly did not only accept him, but embrace him. But man, it's a long road. You got to be patient.
You're quite candid in the book, not just about your relationship, but also your career, because we've watched you for years, whether you were on Canadian television or American television. You're quite candid about money, because we just assume that if you've made it on TV, you're rolling in dough. But it was tough, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we made a decision, my wife and I, early on, that if we could do it, she would be a stay-at-home mom. And we were able to do it, but only because I had to, you know, move every time it got super tight. And so there was one point when I was working for the CBC in Toronto. I was hosting a show called Midday, which was a midday current affairs interview show.
Yeah.
But that wasn't enough. So I got a job, part-time job teaching. My wife got a part-time job cleaning tables in the cafeteria at school just so she could, you know, keep an eye on the kids. So, and that wasn't enough. And then I got removed from that job, and the CBC at the time didn't offer me anything else. And I was terrified. I mean, I was a week away from missing mortgage payments, and then this amazing thing happened where I got this job offer at ABC, and you know, to be frank, didn't really have to worry as much from that point forward. But you know, certainly in Canada, there's a few people at the very top, and I've been lucky to be among them, who do very well. But then there's a massive gap in salaries, and you know, most of the people that work on television never break six figures.
Yeah. To this day, you don't know who sent your tapes to ABC?
I still don't. I got this call out of the blue from somebody saying, do you want to come down and talk to us? And first question she asked me was, who sent me the tape? And I said, I don't know. But what was happening in those days, you know, this was pre-internet, is they would have recruiters come up and sit in hotel rooms and scan Canadian television and see, you know, what kind of talent existed in Canada, because it was easy to transfer to the United States. And, you know, I got to presume that somebody picked up on a midday show I was doing at the time.
Now, whatever happened to that baton that Charlie Gibson and David Hartman gave you?
Great question. It's behind my desk still. And the story for your listeners was that when I took over Good Morning America, David Hartman, the first host, had never done a formal transfer, because his departure from GMA wasn't very pleasant. And so he never handed the baton over to Charlie Gibson, who was the second male host. So on that day, he bought a baton that he then passed to Charlie Gibson, that he then passed to me, that I kept. But I have an opportunity in 3 weeks. It's the 40th anniversary of Good Morning America, and all of us are getting back together, and they're going to do a big anniversary special. So I'm wondering whether I need to pass the baton to George Strombolopoulos, too.
Stephanopoulos, yes.
Yeah, we got Strombo, they got Steffo. And So I think I might do that.
Now, you talk in the book about all these great journalists that you worked with at ABC. One of my favorites growing up was David Brinkley. Did you have any dealings with him?
I never did. I mean, I passed him in a hallway when I worked at ABC. But no, I never did do that.
Now, a lot of people liked Kevin Newman Live, which appeared on CTV Newsnet, and were disappointed when that got canceled. You know, you were part of CTV's election coverage, and you report for W5. Now, you said something to Simon Hoopt at the Globe and Mail that I found interesting, that you've lost your ambition. What did you mean by that?
I just enjoy the work. You know, I was disappointed when KN Live didn't succeed, because I really loved that show, and I thought we were, you know, we were trying something new and different, and that doesn't happen very often. But I'm not ambitious. I mean, if I was ambitious, I would have stayed at Global National. But there are other things in my life that I wanted to take care of. My relationship with my family. I wanted to explore my creativity. I wanted to understand the digital emergence better than I did. And I'm really thankful for it, because I've been able to sort of leave ambition behind, and, you know, I don't need to have my own show now. I'm happy working at W5 and backing Lisa up when she's not there. And it's much less stressful. I can tend to relationships better in my life. And, you know, I think there's a thing that can happen to people who've been in television for a long time, that they're afraid to leave because they don't really know who they are absent of being on television. But I think I've been preparing myself for that better by, you know, building a life outside of what my work is.
A lot of people must be asking you and Alex what you would think of Alex as a father. Have you given that much thought?
Well, I think one of the things you're supposed to do as a parent is you're not supposed to put this kind of pressure on them. but I did tell him at one point on this book tour, I said, you know, I don't know if you're going to have children, and he's not certain, frankly. And I said, but the one regret I would have of that is that you might get a better understanding of me as your father, as you age as a father. Because I do think that, you know, I think this is just human nature. We really don't understand our parents until we reach the point that they were where we're at. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it would be, but that's about me. That's about my needy needs. That's not about him.
It's a beautiful book. Congratulations to both of you on it. And
thank you so much.
It's doubtless helped a lot of people already, and I hope it does well so that it helps a lot more people. And I hope it won't be another 10 years before you're back on the show.
No, I should be happily to retirement by then. Who knows what'll be going on.
The website for more, newmanallout.com. The book is called All Out, A Father and Son Confront the Hard Truths That Made Them Better Men. It's published by Random House. Kevin Newman joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.